Thanks for downloading this IMSA Radio podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by visiting IMSAradio.com or search for IMSA Radio wherever they get their podcasts.
The WeatherTech Sports Car Championship on IMSA Radio.
Well, hello everybody and welcome along to Road America coverage from the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre for the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship for 2021. Lots to talk about today, including what happened last night in the State of the Sport address given by President of IMSA, John Dooning. We'll get to that in some stage later on. We're waiting for the cars to head out onto the circuit, and when they do, we'll get some times for you. There was a bit of a truncated session yesterday. Tell you about that with Shea Adam and Jeremy Shaw. Shea, you were watching that last night. Stop start yesterday with weather in the area of America's National Park of Speed. But around about 25, 30 minutes of action last night, despite the worst efforts of Mother Nature to put a stop to the day.
Exactly. And the most important thing about last night's very truncated session, nothing happened. No one off, nobody damaged a car, and everybody went round and round for 30 minutes. Well, no, actually, not everybody went round and round because there were five cars that elected not to risk it at all, including our GTD Championship leader, the Heart of Racing team. They sat out thinking that the session was not going to be terribly relevant for any of our other running this weekend. And I'm hoping that they're correct. But this is Elkhart Lake, and this place has been known to give us some biblical rain before. See last night, if you need to know what I'm talking about. There's rain and thunderstorms in the forecast for later today, John, including 1 to 5 p.m., which is when not only WeatherTech goes out to qualify, but Pilot Challenge has a race.
Yeah, and time's largely irrelevant from that. But just for the sake of probity, Shea, who were the top of their respective classes?
Fastest in overall was Harry Tinknell in the Mazda, the number 55. He set a time of 209.769. And to put that in perspective, our lap record from around here comes at the hand of Dane Cameron in qualifying 2 years ago, 148.7. So about 21 seconds a lap being lost over this 4 mile circuit. In LMP2, it should come to nobody's surprise that it was Mikkel Jensen who was quickest for the 52 PR1 Matheson Motorsport Championship leading entry that he shares with Ben Keating. Oliver Askew pulled out a fast lap, especially considering that the fastest lap had been set fairly early on by Dylan Murray, but Oliver taking the honors for Andretti Autosport, it was a 220.5. In GTLM, it was just a few laps for each of the Corvettes. They went out to basically just shake things down, had a fuel issue that they were addressing in the number three car. They got that sorted, and Antonio went out to actually set the quick time, a 223.7. But the biggest surprise was, well, not really a surprise at all. Lawrence Vanthoor driving with a broken nose after injury sustained last week in the paddock at Spa. He set the quickest time for a GT car, 222 flat. That was 2 seconds clear of next fast in GTD. And the class was spread out in GTD over the course of 7 seconds. That gives you an idea. People were not pushing. They were just trying to get some laps under. In effect, it was recon laps for a lot of people.
Lawrence Vanthoor beaten in the full contact paddock event in the bronze medal playoff by a quad. Didn't get the medal there for Belgium, I'm afraid. But good to see him back. And if you think it's inconvenient and somewhat disconcerting to have a COVID test, then think about how much more it must have been for Lawrence, who had to have that with a broken nose. I don't even want to know. Jeremy Shaw joins us in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre. Good morning, Jeremy. Seems like an age since we've had the whole IMSA family together, and that's because it's been quite a long time in this middle part of the season. But it's all action now, right through till Petit Le Mans in the end of the year.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. And yeah, thanks for painting that picture, John.
Sorry about that.
Of Lars Vandoor after his mishap. Was he playing silly beggars in the paddock?
No, he wasn't, actually. He was on his a little electric scooter, and somebody on a quad, presumably dashing between tyre paddocks, bailed into him, and he completely face planted into the ground and got some nasty facial injuries, which required stitches and a broken nose. So, no, as far as I can see, and I've had this confirmed independently, no blame at all on the driver, Vandoor, at least this time. So yeah. he was an innocent party for once.
Once again, it underlines why some, you know, quite a few tracks don't allow motorised vehicles in the paddock area. Anyhow, moving on. Great to be back here at Road America. One of the classic tracks, not only in North America, but indeed the racing world. It's a favourite of just about anybody who has ever been here, on track or off, to be fair. It's what provides some of the best viewing in the nation and therefore the world, and the drivers love it. It's a real challenge around here. Some very long straights, of course, but some tricky corners and a good variety of corners as well. Shay talked about the conditions last night. The session had been delayed somewhat by a massive storm that came through, as you were alluding to, during the afternoon. Of course, look, this is the Midwest in the summertime. You know, storms occur on a fairly regular basis, not quite as regular as Florida, perhaps, but they certainly are not unknown at all. So, it's no surprise to see that most of the teams did go out yesterday during that session just to get some wet weather time around here. Most of the teams, or many of the teams, have tested here or have experience here in the past. But it's still always good to kind of dial yourself in again, because these drivers don't get, thankfully, an awful lot of chance to drive in the rain. So it's good to see that it was a pretty uneventful session. And now we can get down to the serious business.
So that's Jeremy Shaw with me, John Hindhoff, in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre. And Shay Adam is our VP Racing Fuel Pit and Paddock reporter. We'll get through some of the main points whilst the cars are still heading out from the State of the Sport last night. I don't know if you've had time to digest it all, Jeremy, but looks like with just a few changes in the order, all of the tracks that we have traditionally expected to see on the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship are back on for next year. One or two of the series have been split off. I noticed the MX-5s were back here at America's National Park of Speed, although supporting a NASCAR event rather than being with IMSA. So they'll have two away days, once with IMSA at St. Pete's and once here with NASCAR. But what we're seeing again is just consolidation once again from the calendar, and that's never a bad thing for my money.
Indeed so. You know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And certainly the schedule here we've had over the past several years. Yes, we've had some tweaks due to COVID, or a lot of tweaks last year, much less so this season. Just a few changes in the dates this year. Really, that's about it. Apart from the only event that has been cancelled was the one that was scheduled for Canadian Tire Motorsport Park. So fingers crossed that we will be able to go back north of the border for the first time since 2019 in 22. But as you say, very much a traditional schedule in here, and that's always good to see, I think.
Yeah, very good to see, very good indeed. We've got this is the complex session, Shay, isn't it? Can you just remind Jeremy and I, who never seem to be able to get our heads around what is going on here? We've got an hour and 15 minutes, or 75 minutes, of which about 90 seconds have elapsed with cars out on the track. No times yet to report. How is it split up, please?
It's not that complicated. It's an hour and 15 minutes total. Everybody gets 1 hour. If you are a silver or bronze driver racing in the GTD, LMP3 or LMP2 category, now is your 30 minutes of track time. At what time would that be? 9:25 local to 9:55. Anybody may drive in those two categories, regardless of your driver rating. But for right now, the only cars on track are being driven by silver or bronze rated drivers. At 9:10, which is in about 11 minutes time, we're going to allow the GTLM and the DPI cars, or the entirely pro cars, out onto the track as well. They get to drive until 10:10, meaning they get an hour's worth of a session, not broken up at all for them. It's plain and simple. But basically, if you're an AM car, your AM driver must be out on the circuit now. And if you want your pro driver to get some track time, they've got to wait a little while.
Yeah, exactly so. Exactly so. Not too much cloud threatening at the moment as we're waiting for the first set of times to come in. Expect them to be much quicker than we saw in that truncated session yesterday evening, because we do have now a full dry track. Brand new chassis this weekend for the number 4 Corvette, as the car that it replaces is already on its way to Le Mans. That car will become the spare chassis and go across the end of this meeting, as reported by Corvette Racing earlier in the week. Still the clouds overhead keeping the track temperatures relatively low, 25 Celsius on the track. Actually, that would be... Go ahead, Chip.
I've just checked the weather because you were bringing that up to just check on what our updated forecast is. We've now got thunderstorms from 1 p.m. until 7 a.m. tomorrow. So the rain is extending its reach, and it's gone up in percentage as well in terms of the likelihood. It's going to be a wet one later. Bring your raincoat if you're heading out to the track.
Right, okay. 15th next Sunday, so a week tomorrow, is the test day for the 2021 Le Mans 24 Hours. It starts off a very hectic race week with the first free practice on Wednesday. Then practice and qualifying running through Wednesday and Thursday for the 24-hour cars. Track action on Friday, but not for the 24. And then, of course, Saturday and Sunday of the following weekend is the race itself. The race start going back to 4 o'clock, a more traditional French start time in Central Europe. And we can... Indeed so, Jeremy. And if you didn't catch it, our sister service over on RS1, Haggerty Radio Le Mans, will be the only broadcaster who will offer you full coverage of all of those sessions. So that's full live and free coverage with no blocks or breaks of test day on Sunday. I think we're the only people who do that, full stop, actually. Sunday the 15th, extended by an hour. That session runs rather further into the evening in France. And then all the free practices, again, the only broadcaster to do that. Qualifying, Hyperpole, and all of the race with no blocks or breaks. That's Haggerty Radio Le Mans on RS1. Access that via radiolemans.com, and that starts next Sunday. Lots of feature programmes, some historical perspective from our colleagues at Historic Racing News radio show. Paul Tarsi, Jim Roller, Joe Bradley, David Ingram as well on that, as we've been looking back into the past to try and give some context to where we are in the current set of regulations and looking back at when times have changed in the past. We'll have Andrew Marriott with more of his Marriott's memories. That's all starting a week tomorrow, a week on Sunday, the 15th then, for the Haggerty Radio Le Mans for 2021. And quite a lot of IMSA interest to share in that, which, you know, we're talking about that on IMSA Radio at the moment, but an awful lot of IMSA interest for Le Mans this year.
218 drivers so far in 2021 have taken part in an IMSA race weekend prior to this weekend. 64 of them are going to be racing at the 24 Hours of Le Mans. And if you want to know what kind of an impact IMSA has on the Le Mans grid, 295 race wins between those drivers heading over to Le Mans to represent. Wow. So we do have a very good presence there.
Very good. Very good indeed. And some American flagged entries as well. Haggerty Radio Le Mans preview program start over on RS1 on Monday and Tuesday for those from 8 o'clock UK time, so 3 o'clock on the eastern seaboard. Got some times coming in. Remember, we're not yet into the area where we can get the pro cars out. Ben Keating on top at the moment. He'll be at Le Mans. PR1 Matheson Motorsport Orica, number 52, 158.5. And Jeremy, that's the only sub 2 minute lap that we've seen so far in this session.
Just getting up to speed, really, just the one flying lap by most of the cars, maybe a couple at this stage. Just looking at the scoring here, the number 76 Compass Racing Acura shown has stopped on the racetrack somewhere in sector two. We just saw an onboard as I was thinking about giving that some thought. I didn't see it parked on the side of the track anywhere, so not quite sure where that might be. But 158.5, the quickest time so far, the fastest time in GTD, just to be set by Aaron Tielitz, the 206.0, the fastest time yesterday, Shay would say, was a 209.6 by the prototype car. So that's again, things a little bit into perspective. Already quicker in GTD than anybody went yesterday in that wet session. I think it was raining during that final session yesterday, but the track remained very wet all the way through it, certainly. And even apparently a couple of flashes of thunder somewhere in the distance.
Lightning, absolutely. We had hailstones.
Flashes of lightning, that's a better idea. But thankfully they were sort of behind race control, so that was good news. And not close enough to cause any dramas at the racetrack, so that was certainly a stroke of good luck there.
Great to hear the sounds of the race cars going through the kink and down towards Canada Corner with just under 4 minutes still to go before we release the pack of pro drivers and their cars. You're listening to IMSA Radio, Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre, with Jeremy Shaw, John Hindhoff, Shea Adam, our VP Racing Fuel Pit and Paddock reporter. And wherever you are, it's good to have your company. Hello to our NASCAR Productions TV colleagues up in Charlotte, North Carolina. A lot of hard work been going on in the last few days by them there, by their colleagues trackside, to make sure we can see every single part of the just over 4 miles. And it would be remiss of me not to mention as well Tyler Norling and the IMSA technical crew on site, who also make sure that we get what we need from the track, and indeed that you at the track at Road America can hear us on the public address system as well. And hearing that it's Ashton's last weekend working on the team. So best of luck to whatever pastures are next for you, Ashton. Up to and through the start-finish line for the number 16 Wright Motorsport Porsche going through. And Ashton off to serve in the military. Wish him all the best. And stay safe. Thank you for your service. Just seeing that number 16 cresting the hill there, Jeremy, in front of the press centre and the pit lane. One of the cars that I was out practicing with last weekend at Silverstone, although I didn't have to race against it, thank goodness, was the number 16 at Dyson Lola. And it was running as 116. In the Silverstone Classic last weekend, reminded of that run to the line, which is still one of the closest finishes that we've ever seen in IMSA history. And I'm still not sure my head has recovered from just about exploding that. We've had some good finishes here down through the years. It's a long track, it's a fast track, but it seems to promote good racing here at Road America.
It really does, doesn't it? And some cars are quicker on the straights than others, or perhaps more so back in that sort of era and further back than nowadays, where they're a little bit closer. But yeah, it has some fantastic races here, and it's a track on which you can overtake, and it's a track on which a driver can make a difference, particularly in wet conditions. Here at Elkhart Lakes Road America. But yeah, it's a fabulous venue, and you know, several really good overtaking opportunities, a good chance to get a draft in several places. It's not super wide here, certainly, but it's wide enough to be able to make passes. And yeah, just a great racetrack all the way around. Ben Keating remains fastest, 157.6, the fastest time so far by Ben. The LMP2 lap record as a 152, set in qualifying a couple of years ago by James French, local driver. He's got a massive amount of experience around here. Not racing this weekend, unfortunately, James. Probably the first time he's missed this race in quite a long time, actually. Simon Trouble holds the race lap record in LMP 23.4. So 3 or 4 seconds off of that so far by Ben Keating. But that's fine. He's about almost a second clear of Stephen Thomas in the win autos. Number 52, and as I say that, Stephen actually goes to the top, 157.2 in the number 11 Win Autosport Orica. Ben Keating down to second place. John Ferrano is in third in a Tower entry, not yet below the Super Baron. And Mike Merriman in the Hero Motorsport 18 this weekend. It won't be Dwight's teammate. Won't be Kyle Tilley, as would be the usual occurrence, because Kyle's busy making his NASCAR debut at Watkins Glen this weekend. So instead, they've got somebody by the name of Ryan DeYell, not quite sure who he is, massively experienced, of course. And Ryan's super excited to be back at the wheel of this number 18 Orica for this weekend at a track that he truly loves as well.
So just under the hour to go, which means the big boys are out and the big toys as well. Out come the DPIs. Expecting the General Motors announcement, their belated announcement of the shared platform with BMW and Dallara. That's expected to come in Le Mans week. And Cadillac, of course, Shea Adam, remarkably, have not got a win at Road America. That is a stat that beggars belief.
Right. Well, and also Wayne Taylor Racing has never won at Road America. Of course, they've been representing Cadillac for the last 4 years now with the act. From last year, yes, Cadillac, they came in, they inherited the Chevy domination, did not manage to hold on to that, though. It was a Nissan who won in 2016. It's been Acura with wins the last couple of years. Mazda got the win in 2019, of course, and Orica won overall in 2018. That does not mean that there was any room for any GM-branded car taking victory. They've got the best odds to get it done this year, 3 out of the 6 cars in the class. But odds don't necessarily guarantee a victory.
Shea Adam, VP Racing Fuel Pit and Paddock reporter. So how long will it be then until one of the DPIs hits the top? It was Harry Tinknell in the number 55 Mazda, the mostly white with blue and red on it. That's the 5-5 car, the double nickel car, just going round turn 5, heading up the hill towards turn 6. That was the quickest car in that short and damp session yesterday. The Idemitsu DPI heading through now towards Hurry Downs with a wee bit of traffic ahead of it. And the traffic ahead shouldn't really hold it up, because I think that is the Acura of Wayne Taylor Racing. Got a quick flash of that before it disappeared. Exiting the carousel now, and the track rubbering up rather nicely. Yes, it was the Wayne Taylor Racing, the Cunningham and Alta sponsored car, gloss black and blue. Track really, Jeremy, rubbering up rather nicely despite the bad weather that we've had. There's still quite a lot of rubber down in the areas where you need it, coming out the carousel into the braking area at Canada corner. You can see the undulations there where the cars move around. So track conditions not half as bad as I thought they were going to be today in this early running.
No, I think that's a fair comment. You know, pretty good conditions here this morning. A bit of overcast, as you were saying earlier on. Well, quite a bit of overcast. But it's comfortably warm at the moment. It's not too hot. It'll get warmer as the day goes on, and probably more humid as well, perhaps. But yeah, good conditions right now, I would suggest. You talk about those, the Cadillacs. A couple of relatively minor changes to the balance of performance coming into this weekend. The Mazda has had to add 10 kilograms of weight since the last round for these cars, which was a long time ago now, wasn't it? Watkins Glen, more than a month ago, the last time we saw the DPI cars. So the Mazda has added 10 kilograms. The Cadillacs, no change to the weight or the engine side of things, but they have been allowed an extra 2 litres of fuel to their maximum fuel tank size. And that's been an issue that has been kind of haunting the Cadillac teams, at least according to their engineers, for quite some time. They don't have the flexibility of the Acura and Mazda counterparts. So particularly on a track like here at Road America, which is 4 miles around and an uphill run to the pit lane, fuel consumption massively important. Around here, and you've got to make sure that you've got enough fuel to get around. So that actually should be helpful. And that was the Wins car going off the road at turn 14.
Doing a bit of scenic
route.
Yeah, that is the if this was MotoGP, that would be the penalty loop. I think avoiding that's the 76 Acura, going around the Richard Mille sponsored car, didn't hit anything. Yeah, we've all done that. 360, continue, sneak down through the gears. The Wins car comes into the pit lane, probably to get all the ducts cleaned out. The Wins car, by the way, being the number 52 that we're talking about there. That's one of the prototypes. And scanning down the timing screen to see who was in that at the time. Say again, Shea, sorry?
Ben Keating.
Ben, yes. Ben Keating, nice bit of drifting through the gravel, which is clearly still damp enough to give some purchase. He didn't dig into that and kept his momentum going. He skipped across the top there. And, yeah, they'll need to
get... Nice job there, didn't he? Good bit of rally driving skills there from Ben Keating. He's been out in the entirety of this session so far. Stephen Thomas, by the way, 56.1, so a second and a half quicker than Ben. That's a feather in Stephen's cap. These two have had some tremendous battles for the pole position through this season so far. And good to see that they're continuing that little rivalry they've got between, a friendly rivalry, has to be said, between those two, number 11 and number 52. You think they could be expected to be battling for the pole position a little later on this afternoon in LMP2.
Great to have the IMSA cars back after a little summer sojourn. 52 and a half minutes to go. This is the old skate in the middle of the session, and it's Dane Cameron at the top of the times in the 60. Myshank Racing with Kerbager Genie and Acura. It's a Cadillac in second, half a second back for Renger van der Zander, who's the first to get ahead of the LMP2s in the Chip Ganassi Racing Cadillac DPI. Expecting Chip Ganassi Racing to be announced as the preferred team, or at least one of the preferred teams for the new Cadillac programme, and probably doing some WEC races as well to ensure Le Mans entry for the IMSA version of the global prototypes. Really interesting situation at the moment with the global prototypes. There's another car off at turn 14. This time it is a red and white Audi, which is the number 42, and that car's gone a very long way off as well. The NTE Sport car, Don Yount and Jar Hildebrandt in that car. I think it's still Don at the wheel of that car. Yes, it is. And he, again, just going a wee bit wide. There's just a little change of surface there as you turn into turn 14. front end of the car, just getting a little unsettled there for Dunn as he came into it, and almost tracking exactly through where Ben Keating was. But the NTE Audi has continued, that number 42 already at turn three. Yeah, just a really interesting situation with the new regulations for the DPIs, the LMDH version of the DPIs due in 2023. They're supposed to be built on an LMP2 chassis, the next gen of LMP2 chassis, but those cars don't exist yet. So the chassis manufacturers, there are four of them, and three of them are already building chassis for manufacturers: Dallara with BMW and GM, Multimatic with Volkswagen, Audi, and Ligier. We expect them to be building the Alpine. Orica as yet haven't aligned themselves with the manufacturer, although of course they do currently provide chassis for Acura, who have said they want to be involved in some way, shape or form. So we've got a situation where in some ways the cart is going to be leading the horse, because the new LMP2 regulations have been pushed back now, and those new cars won't be introduced till 2024. But the LMDH cars are going to be racing in 2023 at the very latest. Most of the cars on the track by late this year or possibly early next is what we're hearing. And so we're going to have a new set of cars built to a set of regulations that don't exist yet, which is very interesting.
I mean the cars are working pretty darn well now, and as far as the chassis itself is concerned, often there's not a huge difference from one year to the next, particularly when you've been building this sort of car for such a long time.
Except you've got to put a battery box in the new LMDH, and that's got to be built in the chassis.
Yes.
And there's a new set of engine parameters for the LMDH cars to go with. And I mean, the bodywork, obviously, that's fine. That's been freed up a little bit. So that's just a bit of aerial work, says Hindhoff. Obviously, not with the talent of Adrian Newey, but you know, somebody will be able to do that. I just think it's interesting that the LMP2 engine regs and in fact chassis regs haven't been announced yet, and yet we've got cars that are, if not built, certainly designed and on CAD that will have to fit into a new set of regs.
And yeah, very strange, isn't it? They didn't announce all that at the same time, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Although that said, hey, Le Mans always a good place for regulations updates. So it wouldn't be beyond the bounds of possibility for the ACO to announce their new LMP2 regulations. What's very interesting to me is how many of those four manufacturers are likely to provide customer LMP cars, LMP2 cars, and not just rely on the money that's coming from the manufacturers in the research and development and building. Something like 12 to 14 chassis being built by Multimatic for Volkswagen AG, for the two Volkswagen brands, and not expecting to see any customer LMP2 cars, much as we've not really seen an LMP2 car in the current from Riley and Multimatic. Orica probably going to be the only game in town for the new LMP2s, much as they have developed into now. Huda Shaunak has all but one chassis at Le Mans this year out of the 23 entries that are there this year. So LMP2 very rapidly becoming a spec series from the four that started. Lots of excitement to come with those new cars, with the new regulations. Lots of excitement at Le Mans this year as well. Can't wait for it. Three quarters of an hour to go, 46 minutes. Also, as we've been reporting for quite some time now on Midweek Motorsport and here, Lamborghini expected to come in 2024. As we've been mentioning, they've been lobbying for the use of LMDH as the top class in the Asian series, the Asian ACO series. And that seems like that's going to happen. So if that does happen, they want in, but they can't come in 23 because there's no chassis for them. All very interesting indeed. A lot of speculation about how many cars we might see in 2023. 16 manufacturers, I think it was, Jeremy, wasn't it, that John Doonan was telling us at our last IMSA meeting when he joined us on the Michelin Countdown to Green. 16 different manufacturers at the Global Prototype Steering Group, which bodes very well. Now, you know, we don't expect all of them to come in, but the fact that they're interested enough to be there and spend precious time talking about it and finding out if it'll fit their marketing goals and ambitions, that sort of bodes quite well, I think. I know it's a marketing, we're moving into a marketing-led rather than an engineering-led set of regulations, but if that's what brings manufacturers and manufacturer money in, I think we've just got to take that, haven't we?
Absolutely right. I mean, yeah, it's been building that way for, well, decades now, really, hasn't it? Certainly a decade. And no, I think it's, you're absolutely right. You know, a lot of excitement about sports car, global sports car racing, and particularly here, of course, in IMSA. It does bode very, very well indeed. There's lots of excitement about the new category. Yeah, next year for DPI is going to be a bit of a challenge, I think. But, you know, we're certainly going to lose, unfortunately, the Mazda, which is most unfortunate. But, yeah, I'm hearing, you know, there might be another car or two on the grid next season. There's cars around that are not being run at the moment. So, you know, it's not beyond the realm of possibility. I also heard that Chip Ganassi Racing might be doing a test here at Road America later in the week to try out a few drivers as well with Kevin Magnussen. Yeah, Kevin Magnussen, of course, he's already committed, isn't he, to Peugeot, isn't it, next year?
Yeah.
In World Endurance Championship. And I think that pretty much precludes him from racing over here in IMSA, I believe. I think there's going to be a test here. So that's going to be rather interesting. And, you know, Ganassi, certainly it's not beyond the realm of possibility that they might add a second car for next year just to ramp up further in preparation for the LMDH in 2023.
Yeah.
Hey, why not?
Yeah. GRT, Grasser Racing Lamborghini, the bright green machine, just staying out the way, coming to the final corner. Nice bit of driving there for the GT Daytona. And I've got right rear puncture, I think, on that car. Seems to be sitting down low and has headed for the pit lane. Now, that car had been running rather well, but heading back into the pit lane with Misha Goikberg behind the wheel and into the pit lane. Now, some penalties coming through. Shea Adam has this VP Racing Fuel report.
Pfaff has been given a rather large speeding penalty in the pit lane, 14 kilometers an hour over the limit. That's a bit late to push the speed limit button there. So they will have to serve a stop and go penalty. Most of the speeding penalties on the pit lane result in you just having to do a drive-through. Race control not messing around today. They've issued a few warnings as well. And it is important to note the 30 minutes has elapsed for the GTD, LMP3 and LMP2 cars. So we can no longer assume that it's the silver or bronze drivers in those, because the golden platinums are allowed to play now too.
Okay, all good. It's getting a little more overcast here at Road America. But for the moment, at least, we are green and green flag racing, as we have been since the start of this session. We started with 75 minutes on the clock. We've now got 42 to go. At IMSA Radio, if you want to get in touch with us, whether you're trackside listening on scanner frequency 454 on the PA, thanks Tyler and the team, or further afield on IMSA Radio, all the remaining sessions, including warm-up for IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship, covered live flag to flag with no interruptions. We've got qualifying in sound and vision for everybody, and the whole race if you're outside the US. No live network TV coverage this weekend. Tape delay at 8 p.m. on Sunday on NBCSN, 8 p.m. Eastern. So set your DVRs for that nor Lee Diffie either, because he's on Olympic track and field duty, although that will have finished by then, but I don't think he'll be back in time to do that.
Great job too.
He's done a better job than the American track and field team, hasn't he, let's be honest?
Yeah.
Being terribly disappointing.
It's been tremendous, tremendous to listen to Lee. I think he's done a fantastic job along with his co-commentator on all the track and field stuff. And he was, track and field and marathon was on yesterday as well. That was an exciting. The ladies' marathon, the men's marathon's today, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Has it finished yet?
They will have started early. They moved it to Sapporo, didn't they, because of the weather conditions, and they were starting them earlier in the day.
Yeah, it was always going to be in Sapporo, I think, but they brought it forward, and it's because of the heat and humidity oppressive in Tokyo. But again, it wasn't actually much cooler even at 6 o'clock in the morning.
It really wasn't
yesterday, but
so we'll another golden day for golden Olympics for the Brits as well.
What an Olympics, eh? Brits have had fantastic.
Great Britain and Northern Ireland racking up already over 60. Medals.
What's the record in the past?
67 at Rio. I think we had 59 or 60 in 2012 at the London Games. So we've racked up another gold this morning in the men's modern pentathlon, which was fabulous to watch. Enjoyed that. So cleaned out both the men's and the women's golds in modern pentathlon. Brought together as a, and they've changed the regs there, and they've really made that build towards the end, a bit like our qualifying sessions, as everybody's getting faster towards the end. They set people off, and basically the first person across the line is the winner in the end of the running and the shooting part at the end of the modern pentathlon now. So you don't have to wait and say, oh, he's got 226 points and he's got 554 and all of that. I found that really enjoyable, both yesterday and early this morning. 38 and a half, call it 39 minutes to go. Let's have a look at the times. We'll talk about GTD. That's the, at the moment, the bailiwick of Vasa Sullivan in the pits. Aaron Tielitz has the fastest time at the 2.064 from Bill Oble in the Turner Motorsport BMW, 14 from 96. It's all the yellow cars at the top with Vasa Sullivan in third as well with that yellow and black Lexus RCF Frank Montecalvo. In fourth, then Richard Highstand for the dark grey carbon by Peregrine. And that is Frank Montecalvo coming in the pits. Pat Long for Wright Motorsport in fifth, and Ross Gunn for Heart of Racing Aston Martin in sixth position in the 23 car. In GT Le Mans, Nick Tandy was out early on there. He's in third at the moment. Antonio Garcia, that's the new car, of course, the new chassis for Nick Tandy, the number four Corvette this weekend. Their previous car already on its way to Central France for Le Mans test next weekend. The number four car will be following it out as the spare chassis. Antonio Garcia in second, and Matt Campbell for WeatherTech Racing. And the WeatherTech Porsche then leading out there in P3. Oliver Askew. Sorry, go ahead, Jeremy.
On from what you were talking about there, the Corvette team, I think, I'm not sure how seriously they're taking this race here in terms of IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship points. I don't mean that to be disparaging in any way at all, but this is a track on which they traditionally base their preparations for Le Mans in terms of the low downforce settings that are required. The straight line speed, of course, is what they need at Les Arts for the next couple of weekends. And each year they have a test here at Road America, generally in May, did the same again this year to prepare these C8Rs for what will be their first run at Le Mans. And of course, this is the final opportunity for them, and a great opportunity just a week before the test day to really learn as much as they possibly can to be best prepared as possible for racing at Le Mans in 2 weeks' time. So I think that is certainly, I think, playing a big part in their thinking this weekend. They've pretty much got the championship already wrapped up here in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship, and so they can afford to concentrate, particularly to get just to get that car ready for Le Mans, and in a different configuration that would be running as it than it otherwise might be optimized for running here in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. If that makes sense, did I confuse myself there?
No, I followed it. Not much. Just might be that I have the same twisted logic as you, though, Jeremy. Nobody else may well know. I think half the time, we know what we're talking about, but nobody else does anyway. To be quite. No, I followed that. It was perfect. Makes perfect sense. Absolutely perfect sense. First time for the C8R at Le Mans, of course. So the ACO have got a bit of data from when they ran at Spa earlier on at the year, and they have been on all of the balance of performance equalisation of technology, whatever it's called, sheets for all of the races, even though they haven't been in Europe. And now, big asterisk, Le Mans does not have to follow the dynamic BOP that the rest of the WEC does, and I suspect there will be more data taken at test day a week on Sunday, so yeah, keep an eye on that. But good to have Corvette back in Europe, hugely important for them and for their fans. They are actually massive in France. The Corvette Club in France is huge and very enthusiastic. Going back a very long time. Always well. Yeah. Well, always a big support for the Corvettes.
Yeah, you're right, John. Of course, and the Labra competition team have run Corvettes in the past. That there isn't a C8R for them to run this time, is there? But
no.
Who knows down the road a little bit.
Hello to Justin Henderson. Staining a fence on a hot day in Tennessee, listening to IMSA practice at the moment at IMSA Radio. Justin, you're doing fine work there, but you did just miss a bit on that panel. You need to go back a bit. You missed three slats there. I can see that from that picture. Not helping, am I? Okay. Thanks for tuning in, Justin, and letting us know at IMSA Radio. What are you doing this morning, afternoon or evening, wherever you are in the world? Global audience for IMSA Radio. And still to come, more free practice. We've got the Idemitsu Mazda MX-5 race in sound and vision, all on imsaradio.com. We've also got qualifying for this category, the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship at the IMSA Sports Car Weekend. That is also available to everybody. And we'll be on XM Sirius for this race on Sunday as well. I'll get you all the details of the tune-in for that once we have them confirmed from our colleagues at XM Sirius. New fastest lap in LMP2 as people are dialing themselves back in. And a name, Jeremy Shaw, that we are used to seeing at the top of timing screens. Not necessarily in LMP2, but Aero Motorsport at the tops with a driver who knows this place very well indeed.
Yeah, that would be Ryan Dielle. In car number 80, just 0.033 seconds, by the way, ahead of Gabriel Obrey in the Tower Motorsport car number 8. So those two couldn't be much closer. Mikkel Jensen has climbed aboard the number 52 car, but hasn't yet improved upon the time that was set earlier by Ben Keating. Apparently, Ben, I don't think that's right, actually. I think it is. My scoring system here is showing that Ben set that time, but I don't think he did. If he did, he's about a tenth of a second quicker than Stephen Thomas, so that's certainly conceivable. And Tristan Nunez now at the wheel of the number 11 car for Wynn Autosport. That was the car that had been quickest for quite a long time in the hands of the team principal there, Stephen Thomas. Overall now, we've got the number 10 car, the championship leading Konica Minolta Cadillac for Wayne Taylor Racing, car number 10. The time was set by Philip Albuquerque. It's Ricky Taylor at the wheel of that car at the moment, just 0.021 quicker than Pipo Durrani's number 31 Reeland Engineering Cadillac. The Mazda in third position, Harry Ticknell, who's at the wheel now, set that time at a 151.3. So it's 150.7 for Taylor, 50.8 for Nasser, by Durrani, but it's Nasser driving that car at the moment. And Harry Ticknell, a 151.3, just about a tenth of a second ahead of Renge van der Zande, who is a couple of tenths ahead of Dane Cameron in a number 60 car. LMP3, three. It's Oliver Askew who leads the way. Interesting, by a couple of tenths of a second over Rasmus Lind. So it's number 36 car of Andretti Autosport, fastest there, Oliver Askew. Rasmus Lind set the time in number 38 Performance Tech Motorsports entry. Those two have got a lot of seat time here at Road America in the Road to Indy, the feeder series towards the NTT IndyCar series. Interestingly, it's one of the tracks on which Oliver Askew has not won, in actual fact, either in USF 2000, Indy Pro 2000, or Indy Lights, which is somewhat surprising because he won a couple of championships as he moved on up the ladder very, very quickly. Rasmus Lind also hasn't had a win here, but he's had a whole bunch of pole positions. Unfortunately, each of his 2 years, both in USF 2000 and Indy Pro 2000, he came across a guy called Carl Kirkwood who beat him in the races each of the times. But Rasmus Lind, he's had, I think, three pole positions and two fastest race laps here without the win. So it's going to be interesting to see those two battle in the race here tomorrow. That's number 36 of Oliver Askew and number 38 of Rasmus Lind.
That's Jeremy Shaw. He's with me. Hello, I'm John Hindhoff. We're in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre. We've got half an hour to go of the session as a whole. Not everybody will get the whole of that 30 minutes. Just starting to look a little more overcast. The headlights on the cars just standing out a wee bit more as the Auto Nation Sirius XM pink and black Acura comes to the final corner and heads up the hill, heading into the pit lane for Dane Cameron for Mayershank Racing with Kerb Agajanian. And the pit lane speed limit not until just before the brow of the hill there, so you've got to keep on it and then get onto the pit lane speed limit as quickly as you can. Thank you to our team up in Charlotte as ever for making sure we can see all around this magnificent circuit. Really lovely. I've noticed quite a lot of you on your social media, both in the teams and those of you spectating. Not just a great track to watch at, to compete on, but to eat at, with some of the best concessions at any racetrack anywhere in the world. And I say that without fear or favour. Trust me, I've tried most of them at most of the tracks we've been to. And all benefiting local charities as well. So if you're at Road America for the first time, be aware that when you go and buy something at one of the food concession stalls, you are benefiting local charities. You'll see all the names of the charities there, and you'll get some fabulous food as well. Where else can you get corn and cheese curds?
Yeah, I saw Andy Lally at midweek, and he was actually at the skateboard park in
Sheboygan. Of course he was.
Absolutely. He was supposed to be coaching somebody at the track, but they kind of backed out at the last minute. So Andy said, "What shall I do?" I know what I'll do. I'll head to the skateboard park as he would. And he was telling me, yeah, you know, you'll... he loves coming to Road America here because of the corn in particular. Because he's a vegan, so he doesn't go for the brats, but he loves coming here for the corn. So yeah, it suits everybody's taste here. I think this racetrack, it's one of the few tracks perhaps that can please absolutely everybody.
Yeah, and as I say, I love the idea of the local charities benefiting as well. They all run their own concessions, Dan. It's really good stuff. We're around the world on IMSA Radio via IMSAradio.com. Here at the track on 454 scanner frequency at 87.9 FM as well. That is the Road America FM frequency. So plenty of ways for you to get involved and listen in, as well as the very excellent PA system here at the track as well. And again, very many thanks as ever to the track services and technicians, and also Tyler Norling and the rest of the team for literally hooking us up this weekend in the best possible sense of that phrase. This has been wonderfully uneventful, Jeremy, says Hindhoff, with hashtag blame Hindy already being typed in readiness for the next few minutes when something happens. But this, given yesterday and the stop-start nature and the uncertainty of what was going on, exactly, Jeremy Shaw, what the teams needed.
Yeah, very much so, and you know, getting plenty of track time in there, and you know, and good conditions this morning. You know, this overcast certainly is helps everybody pretty much. It, it makes sure this the Michelin tires don't get too overworked, and it's a little bit more comfortable for the drivers as well. So yeah, getting good lap times here. I think pretty much most of the teams have completed a fair number of laps. The two Corvettes only 12 laps. So far, the most laps completed by the LMP2s, of course, they were out for the extra 15 minutes compared to the pro driver lineups, i.e. DPI and GTLM. 22 laps then by the number 18 car. Dwight Merriman just getting back in that car after Ryan Dell kind of did the middle stint during this session and turned the best time of 153.8. did Ryan Dell, so comfortably quicker than everybody else. Tristan Nunez is now aboard the number 11 Winode Sport Orica. He's just jumped up to second place in car number 11, but he's still half a second behind that excellent time set by Ryan Dell. And Gabriel Aubry, just a couple of tenths behind him, and the surprise probably is that Mikkel Jensen all of a sudden finds himself in fourth position in that Winode Sport car number 52.
Shea Adam can give us a VP Racing Fuel pit update on Pfaff Porsche number 16 in the pits for quite a while now, last seen in the hands of Pat Long, who had a significant birthday a week or so ago.
Actually, it's the Zach Robichon number 9 Porsche, the Pfaff Motorsport one, the one with the
my apologies.
But yes, happy belated birthday to honorary Canadian Patrick Long, who's been up north to the border for a while. I mentioned a while ago that Zach Robichon had accrued a massive pit lane speeding penalty, 14 clicks over the limit, resulting in a stop and go. That still is on the timing screen because the car has not yet left the pit box. They're dealing with an electrical issue because Zach, when he came into the pit lane, had no lights and, as a matter of fact, no dash to let him know how quick he was going. So 14K over the limit, permissible when you have no idea what your actual speed is.
Well, and of course, if you've got an electrical problem, the electronic pit lane speed limiter may not be working at all. So, you know, that might not have been Zach's fault here. He could have pushed the button, but if there's, you know, if the electrons aren't talking to each other, then it's not gonna hold you there. And normally what you do is just hit the button and just keep your foot down. Just going through turn one, the white... blue stripes and a very bright ready orange prototype. That is the number 30, and that is a fabulous colour scheme for Junior 3 Racing. Is how I'm seeing that, Jeremy. GR3 or Junior 3 Racing, Terry Alton and Mike Ski.
That's exactly right, yeah, Junior 3 Racing there. And that that car has been a regular in the IMSA Prototype Challenge for the last couple of years, and as it's making its debut this weekend in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship with Mike Skeen and Terry Olsen at the wheel. Terry was brought up in the locally here to Road America. This is kind of his home track, but he's making a big step onto the stage this season, is Terry. He's no spring chicken. He's been around for a while, but he's raced just about everything during his lifetime, and very much enjoying driving these cars, and very much looking forward also to racing here at Road America. But a shout out also here to the Palmer family, Greg and Eric, father and son, who generally up until fairly recently were sharing this car in the IMSA Michelin Prototype Challenge Series. Unfortunately, some family medical issues there have kept them out of the car recently. So they are local to here at Road America. So we're very much thinking of the Palmers this weekend. We hope to see them back up to full strength as a family and back here in racing as well. But in the meantime, this number 30 car, as you say, Junior 3 Racing, based out of Mooresville, North Carolina. And they are doing a nice job here. And Terry Olsen, who's racing also not only it done some IPC racing. He made his debut at Road America in this car with Mike Skeen. They finished a brilliant second place there. And now with the veteran Mike Skeen, it's Terry Olsen who's getting the opportunity to do as many laps as possible in this session here this morning.
All this talk of food and everything else is now making me a tad peckish. Still 21 and a half minutes to go, thanks to Richie Barcelli and the rest of the team for making sure we can see the far side of the track. Roger on duty in Nashville this weekend. Pictures for there was stunning, with the Indy cars going either way across the bridge. Looked like something from Gran Turismo when I was watching that yesterday. Busy weekend of sport for our colleagues at NBCSN. The triple header on Sunday, and this race 8 o'clock in the evening on NBCSN, 8 Eastern, that is. And don't forget the Olympic Channel as well. So they're doing a bit of faster, further, higher, stronger at the same time.
New fastest time as the number 31 car comes into the pit lane. Felipe Nasr just jumped to the top of 150.639 on this last lap. So the Wheel and Engineering car has been moving up the championship order in recent races. Of course, had won the most recent race. That was at Watkins Glen a month ago. They're now just 114 points behind. Call it 11 points in old money, which is fairly close. So they've been, after a trying first half of the year. Started on pole position for the first couple of races, but had 2 6th place finishes, which wasn't what they were looking for in the first two rounds of the season. Since then, they've had a couple of podiums, a 4th place finish, and then that win last time out to get themselves right back in the championship fight. And Felipe Nasr, their fastest this morning, 150.639. Now, that is faster than the race lap record here. It was set by Dane Cameron in the Acura last year at 151.0, so 0.4 quicker than that time. Ricky Taylor is at the wheel number 10 car. Car's also in the pits right now, but it's Philip Albuquerque, also sub race lap record time at 150.7.
So opening.
John, sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
We talked about Mikkel Jensen kind of propping up the field in LMP2. No longer. The Dane has jumped to the top at a 153.5 for Mikkel Jensen in column 52. That's the Wins PR1 Matheson Motorsports entry. And that time is a gnat's whisker slower than Simon Trummer's lap record here, race lap record for LMP2 at a 153.4.
At IMSA Radio, if you'd like to get in touch with us, very busy day today. We go sound and vision for Idemitsu Mazda MX-5 next, and then sound and vision as well for qualifying for WeatherTech's championship on imsaradio.com. And later on this afternoon, of course, our Michelin Challenge coverage begins with the race. And, well, already getting very excited about that. Really interesting qualifying. Give you all the rundown in our pre-race for that round about 4:15 local time. Remember, 6 hours the difference between Road America on Central Time here in Wisconsin. 6 hours to the UK, 7 hours back from Central European Summer Time. 36 just going through turn number 5. That is Jared Andretti in the Ligier that leads LMP3. And that JSP320, the car of choice for everyone in that LMP3 category. Other LMP3s are available. But as with most things in racing, Jeremy, somebody builds a better mousetrap, and as soon as people find that out, they graduate towards it.
Yeah, it's interesting that, because in the prototype challenge series this season, it's been pretty much nip and tuck. It's a Ducane that leads the championship, and has certainly been very quick on occasion. But as you say, oddly, none of the Ducane teams opting yet, or at least on a regular basis, to be in the IMSA World Tech Sports Car Championship. We've got 7 LMP3 cars this weekend, with the addition of that number 30 car this weekend. The number 84 Transformers entry for D3 and Dawson Racing, not here this weekend. Not quite sure why. I did ask the question, didn't get an answer. But hopefully they'll be back for the next round. But still a good field in LMP3s. But as you say, all Ligiers. But yeah, we've had a couple of different teams, both Mulner and 47 most watched running chicanes earlier this season, but not doing so at the moment.
So coming down here to... Do we see a checkered flag in about a minute's time?
No, just as there is no secondary green flag for when the prototypes, the DPIs and GTLMs are released. But when the session is over, when time has elapsed, when you've had an hour on track, you better go find the pit lane. And if you don't, it will result in a penalty that carries over to the start of qualifying. So the ramifications are quite severe if you are in GTD, LMP3 and LMP2 and do not pull off the track in about 42 seconds time.
Okay. Thank you, Shea. Shea keeping in touch with what's going on in the pit and paddock, not just of the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship over this IMSA Sports Car Weekend here at Road America, but working the VP Racing Fuel pit reporter and paddock reporter magic. Keeping in touch. And thank you to all of the teams, drivers, PRs, for making sure that we get the information. Not been easy over this last 18 months. Know you're listening in on the PA and on 87.9 FM. So thank you. Not always been able to work the way we would like to. Let's take a Corvette Racing update from Shea.
For four times today, there have been penalties for Corvette Racing drive-through speeding on the pit lane, plus one. They fixed it. They just did a successful drive down the pit lane and did not accrue another penalty. So thank you, Corvette Racing, for getting that message off my timing screen finally. And now they can get back down to business.
Right. Do we have to turn that little screw to the left or the right? Which way is it? Just one click either way. That's what. Yeah, very good. It's all done electronically now. Cars beginning to peel off into the pit lane prior to the start of the last 15 minutes. We're into that now. So we will see then in this next session the GT cars pulling into the GTDs, pulling into the pit lane. Oh, we've got a red flag. Red flag. So, oh, and it's because we've had an accident on the run down to Canada Corner. And I'm afraid it's the normally immaculate Wolver Racing 61. That's one of the LMP3 cars, the black car, Augie Papstand, Tonis Kasemets. And that car has gone in, damage to the front. It was Tonis Kasemets who was driving that car. And with 13 and a half minutes to go, that will bring this session to a halt for the moment. The clock will still run. Jeremy Shaw, significant lap times in GTLM at the front of the field just before that red flag came out.
Yeah, Maddie Campbell, a little while ago, I think, perhaps now, it was Maddie Campbell who set the time. Cooper McNeil has been driving that car most recently, number 79 Proton Competition, WeatherTech Racing, 79 Porsche 911 RSR19. The fastest time there was set by Maddie Campbell, 201.843.
Wow.
That's a full three-quarters of a second faster than the race lap record. It was set by Antonio Garcia last year at 202.6. The qualifying lap record by Lawrence Vanthoor, significantly quicker than that, 2 seconds quicker, in fact. That was also set last year to 2:05. Knocking on the door, 2 minutes of the 2 minute barrier. So that's a really good lap time there for Maddie Campbell, who has had success here in the past. He was part of that winning team in 2019 in GTD for Pfaff Motorsports, driving alongside Zachary Robichon. So he knows his way around here and getting up to speed there in that GTLM Porsche. As a spin for it was Tony's Kasemets. Yeah, showing us driving that car.
Yeah,
he's massively experienced, of course. Yeah, he's out of the car. He won't be very happy with himself.
It was coming out of Canada Corner. Sorry, I think I said coming down to Canada Corner, but it was coming out of Canada Corner, and it looked like he hooked his left-hand side Michelin tyres off the end of the exit kerb, which spun him into the opposite side, the right-hand wall. And we've seen cars go into there and end up on their roofs before. I remember in Pilot Challenge a few years ago, what was the forerunner of Pilot Challenge, a car running up there and ending up on its roof. That is what looks to be quite innocuous accident when you see it. You don't realise how quick the guys are coming out of there, Jeremy, out of Canada Corner. They're on the accelerator really hard, on the throttle really hard there, and looping across to the right. It's not a lot of room before you hit something hard.
It's not. No, that barrier on the kind of on the right-hand side of the track, so across the track from where you'd normally be exiting that corner, you know, it's a common occurrence there for a variety of reasons. You can go off at that particular point. Certainly, it's claimed a lot of cars over the years. He did, thankfully, caught the tyre barrier rather than the concrete wall, which is a little bit further up. But a very uncharacteristic either mistake or I don't know whether he was forced into the accident, whatever. But very uncharacteristic for Tony Kazmetz, who's one of the most experienced drivers in this field. Having said that, this is his first start in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship since he made a couple of starts back in 2014. But other than that, it's his first time here. But his teammate, Augie Papps, is an interesting story. Augie, he's done a fair bit of racing in his life. Of course, he's a third-generation racer, and it was his great-great-great-great grandfather Frederick Papps who established originally the Papps Brewery. Of course, massively popular, particularly in this part of the world, but around America and probably the world as well. But Augie's grandfather had a huge amount of success. He was a legend here at Road America. Augie the third here, who is driving this car this weekend, is did a fair bit of racing back in the day. Did some Shelby Can-Am back towards the late 90s. Did some USF 2000 at that stage. But more recently, he's been running his own team, Papps Racing Services, based just down the road here in Economowoc, just an hour or so away from the racetrack. But aside from a brief outing last weekend, he did an Atlantic race here as part of the Formula Race Promotions weekend. His previous race was back in 2008. That was his most recent race before this for Augie Papps. That was in a GT40 in the Spa 6 hours.
Oh,
by the way,
still my beating heart.
Great guy. Runs a super successful team on the road to Indy. Does Augie? But it was Tony. And for the last couple of years, as well as running his own team, he's been helping out Tony, who is a driver coach with Papps Racing Services, and Tonis, he put this project together in order to run Augie. Augie's been working with Wolver Racing for the last couple of years, just as a crew guy. He's actually changing a wheel changer here last year, I think, or last time the car raced here. But Tony said, "Yeah, we've got to get Augie back in the car." But Tony, the first person he asked about it was not Augie. It was Augie's wife, to make sure she was okay with it, because Tony's and the other team principal at Wolver Racing, Bruce Hamilton, with whom Tony's generally shares this car in the Prototype Challenge, they wanted to kind of thank Augie for all the work he's put in with this team over the last few years. And when they got the clearance from Mrs. Papst, then asked Augie, "Hey, we're going to drive in your home race at Road America." And Augie said, nah, not a good idea. And anyhow, back and forth a little bit, but he's persuaded to come back out here. And he's done a bit of testing, as Augie, and absolutely loves driving these LMP3 cars. And I think Augie would be somewhat relieved that it was Tony who had this incident down there. And Augie's turned some really good laps in this session. He's only not far behind. His best lap was a 2:03.0 in this car. Tony's hasn't yet gone any quicker than that. And he's only half a second behind Dylan Murray, which is no mean feat. So welcome, Augie Papps, making his IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship debut this weekend at the age of 40-something. And, hats off to him. That's a shame that car comes back on a trailer, but I think the damage didn't look too bad, did it, John? So hopefully that car will be out for qualifying this afternoon.
Right front fender, right front wheel arch damage, maybe a bit of suspension or steering arm damage underneath there. As I said, that wall comes up quite quickly, but it didn't bounce too far off. The tyres did their bit. You know, I know people say to me all the time, tyres, really? But they do absorb the impact very, very well and dissipate the energy. And that car just turned around and stopped there on the track. Had to be a red flag. Was in the middle of the track and couldn't move, but looked like Tony Kasemets was out of the car, maybe a little bit winded, just caught on the belt a little bit. The clock has continued to run, so we were just under 14 minutes to go. We're coming down to 6 minutes to go now, with that clock continuing to run on the session. Great that so many of you are here supporting the IMSA Sports Car Weekend. And whether you've brought the children, the family pets, friends or relatives, thank you very much for spending your weekend down here with us. Awful lot of Audi shirts I'm seeing out there. A few Toyota Gazoo racing car, racing shirts as well for the GT4 Supras. And I did see a Germany football shirt as well. I mean football, you know, soccer. Association football out there among the fans. You will hear in the background the noise of racing engines. And Shea Adam, we should have no worries about people finding a bit of clear track in the last 5 minutes. Possibly the opportunity to do a qualifying simulation here.
There's 9 cars out on track right now, John, or 9 cars that are allowed to be out. All 9 of them are out. They're all on the exact same stretch of tarmac. Everybody is between the run into turn 6, as the leaders are now, and coming into braking for turn 5. So, guys, space out 4 miles. You can do this. I believe in you.
Yeah. Great draft. Great draft. Out first, I think, was the number 60, Oliver Pla, the Frenchman, in the Acura, the black and blue number 60 Acura from Meyer Shank Racing with Kerb Agajanian. So he's exiting the 10 car. That is Ricky Taylor. The Meyer Shank car a little bit further back down the road. And there's a couple of Porsches out as well. I didn't see the GT Le Mans cars get out ahead of the prototypes. So that is Cooper McNeil in the WeatherTech Porsche 911 RSR. Very much home ground for Cooper and the McNeils. WeatherTech based just down the road. Normally bring up the RV and make a weekend of it. Up on the top level there in one of the paddocks. So it's Corvette, Porsche and now Acura coming to the right-hand side, going up and over the top of the rise towards a green flag. And they'll have 3.5 minutes to go. So possibly a couple of flying laps here, Jeremy, just to see what's in the cars. May well have bolted a new set of tyres on and be going for the quali sim, low fuel.
Yep, you're right. I think an outlap and a couple of flying laps they've got time for. That's plenty of time to set a representative lap around the 4 miles here of Road America. So, yeah, this last few minutes are going to be pretty interesting, I think. A shame we didn't get all the way through the session. I think Pro-Am categories, LMP3, LMP2 and GTD, they pretty much got their full hour in, didn't they? So it's just the pro contenders that are lacking a little bit of track time as a result of that red flag stoppage. But, all of these guys have got experience around here, so really shouldn't be too much of a drama.
Yeah, they did. They did get that because we were just under 14 minutes to go.
Exactly.
So, yeah, spot on. 15 minutes should have been all down to these 9 cars cutting their way through the traffic. The fastest car on track before the stoppage was the Whelen Engineering Cadillac, number 31, the red and white car, 150.639. Philippe Nasr behind the wheel of that car. He's got 1 Corvette to get around. And that will see him with a bit of clear track ahead of him. And he has now done that. So he heads down towards Canada Corner with just under 2 minutes to go.
He'll have plenty of time here, John, to do one full clear flying lap before the end of this session.
And, yeah, make the most of it, guys, because this is the best you're going to have in terms of track condition until you're qualifying. Big, big, wide exit from their turn 14. Sorry, Jeremy, go ahead.
Well, Tristan Vautier has done exactly that on his first flying lap. It goes to the top.
Wow.
150.573 for the Frenchman in car number five. That's a JDC Miller Motorsports Mustang sampling Cadillac. That's a great lap by Tristan Vautier. He just edges out the best that was set earlier by Felipe Nasr by 0.066 of a second. So new faster time is car number five, Tristan Vautier.
Like Ricky Taylor's on a quick lap as well for Konica Minolta. Acura currently in third position but putting good lap times in. I should say, as it stands at the moment, the top three are separated by 0.2 of a second and the top two by 0.5 of a second. So that number five, Tristan Vautier, going for another quick lap, and he's quick again in the first sector, posting his personal best. But Ricky Taylor with the overall best in the first sector. Through the kink, not a scintilla of a lift for these high downforce prototypes. Big cars, relatively heavy cars, and in racing terms, not that much power, but my goodness, they're efficient. They really cover the ground very quickly indeed when you think that they are lapping now in times equivalent to the race times of the Audis and the Peugeots that had 1,000 brake horsepower, probably half as much again in terms of rubber on the road, and getting on for half as much again in downforce. They had power to give away in those cars. These cars are a model of efficiency. Checkered flag is out. Vautier improves to a 55.5, but that's not going to be quick enough. Ricky Taylor, we said watch out for him. He's down below 150. What a lap by Ricky Taylor in the Konica Minolta Acura. Jeremy Shaw.
Purple in all three sectors there for Ricky Taylor. As you say, 149.752. The race lap record here was a 151.0. So almost a second and a half quicker than that time. And you were just talking about the old Audis around here, the R10 TDI. Marco Werner has the race, the ultimate race lap record here for sports cars, at 148.723. So just about a second quicker than Taylor. That just shows, I think, how good these DPI cars are. As you say, without the super sticky tires, without the massive horsepower, without the cubic dollar budgets that they used to have back in those days, back in 2008, when Marco Werner set that time. So a great lap for Ricky Taylor. And all of the top five cars improving their lap times on that final lap.
Very good. Very good indeed. And if that's what qualifying is going to look like, Jeremy, we're in for a treat this afternoon.
We are. And Ricky's been on the pole here a couple of times in the past. But Wayne Taylor Racing, this is the only track on the schedule that Wayne Taylor Racing and the Konica Minolta team has not yet won. So they are very much looking forward to this afternoon to get that car on the pole position would be the goal. But much more important for them, as the championship leaders in particular, would be to come away with their first win at this historic racetrack.
Well, let's look forward to that. We'll have qualifying for IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship live in sound and vision wherever you are in the world. No blocks or breaks. That's later on this afternoon. Go to imsaradio.com. Scroll down to the bottom for our on-air times. There's a live video button there as well. And that's where you'll also find us next in about 15 minutes from now, when we have race two of the Idemitsu Mazda MX-5 Championship. Jeremy Shaw was with me, John Hindhoff, in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre. Shea Adam brought us the news as our VP Racing Fuel pit and paddock reporter. See you soon with more action from the IMSA Sports Car Weekend here at Road America.
This programme is a radio show limited production. For more, check imsaradio.com and subscribe to IMSA Radio wherever you get your podcasts.